The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Today on Something Major, we are going to go over the men's and women's final. We're going to answer a few Aussie Open fan questions, and we're going to talk about Stevie and Sam's pickleball challenge because they tied for DFL in the snake draft. That's all ahead in Something Major. Welcome back, everyone, to our last episode of Something Major, the Australian Open edition. This is our seventh one, I think. So we've had a lot of fun doing this, and I think our listeners have enjoyed it as well. A lot of interaction on all of our social channels, especially on YouTube. It's been great to see. So appreciate you guys tuning in to Something Major. I'm John Isner, joined with Jack Sock in his Kansas City Chiefs gear. Big game for him. All of America is cheering for the Buffalo Bills, myself included. Of course, I'm with Sam Querrey, Stevie Johnson, and we are joined by Charlie Fox and his team at SIF Creative. So thank you guys for tuning in to Something Major. The tournament has just finished. Both the men's and the women's singles finals have concluded. As you guys know, we know mostly about the ATP Tour, and we've been leading a lot of times on Nothing Major, Something Major, with the men's results. But I'm going to change it up today. We're going to lead with the women's final, in particular, of course, Madison Keys and her massive, massive breakthrough. She won her first Grand Slam title. This is something that, you know, a lot of people thought that she would have broken through a lot earlier. It took her a super long time. I think it was 10 years ago she made her first Aussie Open semifinal. Is that correct, guys? Yeah. Wow. So she broke through at 29 years old. It's amazing to see. Sam, I want to start with you because on the last episode of Something Major, Jack and I were not a part of it. We were flying. You had your funny moment where you FaceTime Maddie at 2:15 in the morning. You know her very, very well. What do you think this win meant for her and like for you personally as a friend of hers? Like, I think you and Stevie are pretty close to Maddie. I think closer maybe than Jack and I are. How happy are you for Maddie in this breakthrough?
So happy. I mean, I think everyone is. She's such a likable person, and it's always cool to see a player. You said it, like, this was, I believe, her 46th slam appearance before she won a major. You don't see that too often, someone winning their first major so late in their career like that. And you could see the joy in her face when she won it. It was amazing. And she went through the gauntlet of draws. It's not like she had an easy road to the final. She beat Collins, Rybakina, Svitolina, Swiatek, Sabalenka. Like, these are big time players. And she, to get through that part of the draw makes it even cooler and more special, I think. She's going to be at a career high ranking. And honestly, the semifinals and the finals were awesome matches. Two tight three setters. Not to dip over to the men real quick, but like, there wasn't an exciting men's match this year. And on the woman's side, she had like two of the most exciting matches of the tournament in the semifinals and the finals. I'm excited for her. I know you guys are excited for her, and it's awesome to see her lift that trophy.
Yeah, it was incredible. I mean, like, the confidence that she was playing with, and we spoke about this earlier. Obviously, as you guys know, when you win a tournament and you go into a Grand Slam on a winning streak, yes, that's going to breed a lot of confidence. But it kept snowballing and kept snowballing and kept snowballing. Did you guys see that 5-all, 30-all point that she played?
That's insane.
She served out wide. Sabalenka crushes a forehand, cross-court return, foot from the line. What does Maddie do? She bends her knees, gets down low, and redirects it for a forehand down the line winner. That's something that only comes with an extreme level of confidence. Stevie, you saw that. I saw you nodding your head. She pulled that off at 5-all, 30-all, was able to hold serve, and then, as we know, broke serve at 6-5 to win the title with a ridiculous match point. What are your thoughts just on Maddie's play in general throughout the whole Aussie Open? It was crazy impressive.
Yeah, before we get to like her playing, there's some things that people, I think most people realize she is one of the nicest people on tour. She's always smiling, pretty bubbly around the courts. Like, you know, if you're in a bad mood, like, go find Maddie and, you know, she'll lift your spirits. And with everything that's been going on here in LA with the fires the last few weeks, you know, she had posted right before, you know, it was, I think, the day of her match that she was going to be making a donation to the fire, kind of anything that she could do to help in the, you know, donation to the LAFD and all the people who were battling the fires. And my wife saw that, you know, and messaged her and was like, hey, wow, that is like, I mean, amazing, because there's other things on your plate right now as you're about to go play your first round match at a slam. It was the same day. And, you know, she writes back right back to my wife, Kendall, and was basically like, what can I do to help? Rackets, signs, events, whatever it is that I can do to help in, you know, getting some money to raise for these, you know, terrible fires and the fire department. So kudos to her first and foremost, because that is the person she is. She's always thinking about someone else. And to do that on the day of a match in Australia is very impressive. I mean, so kudos to her. That is the kind of person she is. And now getting to the tennis side of things, I thought there was an interesting quote she had after the match that said, you know, Maddie, you know, said, I've done a lot of work to no longer need this. I really wanted it, but it was no longer the thing that was going to define me. Letting go of that burden finally gave me the ability to play for it. And that is a huge growth opportunity, because I think she was so consumed with maybe letting people down by not winning a slam the last 10 years that she let go of that, whatever, you know, whatever was hampering her mentally, let go. And now she's ultimately a slam champion. So, I mean, as you guys know, as I mean, in my career as well, when I didn't care so much, I often played better. For her to kind of whatever it took to her to get to that spot mentally, really impressive. I thought that quote kind of resonated with me, and I don't know about you guys, but really happy for her. She played incredible tennis at the biggest moments. She didn't blink in the face of adversity, and she got it done.
Yeah, that's a good point, Stevie, about what you said with, because it's almost like she was playing for something a lot, you know, bigger than herself, for all the people that are affected by the fires. On January 11th, she went to X and she announced a donation of $20,000 to the LAFD, which was really incredible. Her, so she obviously was torn up, but by all the events back home in LA, and she seemed to be playing for a really, you know, big purpose out there.
I think she is one of the nicest people on tour, so I couldn't genuinely be happy for her, more happy for her. I know they recently got married. To a guy we all know well, Bjorn Fratangelo. It was just for me, like, I guess seeing the joy and seeing the happiness, like you said, on her face, and then the team around who we all know well, some people from USTA and different people involved in American tennis. I don't know. It was really, really cool to see, really special to see the breakthrough, like you said, 10 years later. And who knows, this could just catapult her into a string of slams or putting herself in position to win a bunch more slams, which sounds like maybe she never didn't know she'd get back to that spot. So yeah, just genuinely couldn't be more happy for her and her team, everyone around her. And yeah, hopefully this puts her in that position again, over and over again.
Yeah. You touched on Bjorn, is a former colleague of ours, Maddie's husband. He's her main coach, I think. So they got married. I think I mentioned it a few episodes ago. The marriage glow has not worn off at all. She's played fantastic out there with Bjorn and her fitness coach, Richard Langford, out there in the corner. She just really strung it all together. She made a lot of wholesale changes as well. We spoke about she switched to a Yonex. I think she switched string as well. So like, what do you guys think about that? I mean, that's Matt. Has there ever been an equipment change such as that has yielded immediate results? I haven't seen it.
And apparently they didn't have a contract yet either.
Okay. I did not know that. That would make sense if she just switched in the off season. So what is Yonex? How does Yonex approach that? Do they pay her as if she was under contract? Do they pay her a Grand Slam bonus? That's going to be interesting to see.
No, they will.
Yeah. I think you go to Maddie and be like, what do you want at this point? I mean, not only did she win Australia, she won the warm-up tournament in Adelaide. Like, which was a 500 and beat Pegula and a bunch. I think I can't remember how many top 10 players she's beat. She's already beat five wins against top 10 players this year.
It's crazy.
But you're right. I mean, the few changes she went through at the end of the year, marriage, racket change, string change, and then like is on this dominant run. It's pretty cool. And going back to Bjorn, like he set the bar high for himself. Like all of a sudden, she like doesn't win a tournament. Is he on the hot seat? She like finals Indian Wells. I feel like Bjorn could get fired.
he's kind of unfireable, isn't he?
Yeah, he probably is. He probably is.
Probably is. I think so. So she switched string from natural gut. Did players still play with that?
I did my whole career.
You played with natural gut?
Yeah. A lot of guys do, dude.
Really?
I think yeah. Stevie and Roger were the only two.
No. Grigor, Novak, Fritz.
Are you sure Novak? Novak does for sure?
He did. Unless he has switched since I'm no longer on tour. Yes, he did.
I feel like 90% of the WTA and ATP play with just like some sort of poly.
That's probably true, but there is a handful of people that, yes, still use gut.
Well, Maddie switched from natural gut. Does it go in the mains or the crosses? What do you do?
I did both. A lot of the, if you're really good and you're really talented, you put in the main because you get a lot of benefits from that.
So you put it in the cross.
If you get tight.
Maddie probably put it in the main.
If you get tight, it does not work because the ball starts to fly. But yes, I had it in the cross strings probably for 70% of my career.
Okay, well, she went from natural gut. I didn't know that was a thing anymore. I just remember Sampras with the stringalings. Remember he would fix it? He would have the thing in his pocket. Some sort of poly from Yonex. Anyways, great switch. Whoever insisted that she make that switch this offseason, if it was maybe it was her, maybe it was someone else, they ought to get a little piece of that as well because that made a big difference, and she was playing incredible. Jessie Pegula actually said, she had a quote after their Adelaide final. If Maddie plays like she did in the third set of their Adelaide final, she doesn't see anyone beating her. And sure enough, she was right. And she went through Murderer's Row, as Sam mentioned. So massive, massive credit to Maddie. What a huge moment for her. Everyone is so happy for her. And as you guys mentioned, everyone loves her. The locker room loves her on the WTA Tour. Just a great result for Maddie, of course, for American tennis. It did seem that when she lost that U.S. Open to Sloan all those years ago, she seemed to struggle after that loss. I think she took that loss pretty hard, but she finally let go, Stevie, as you mentioned, of that burden trying to win the big one, and she was able to get over the hump. Massive moment, and I think she's capable of more. I mean, she's going to be going in. I mean, you assume maybe she'll take a lot of time off. Indian Wells could be her next tournament. She'll be fully rested for that and fully confident. She could finish this year top three, top two in the world. We'll see what
finish
happens.
Number one if she plays like how she's played.
Of course, month. Credit to Maddie. We are very, very happy for her. All right, we're going to move on to the men's final. A bit of a different start to the show, talking about the women's final, but we had to congratulate Maddie. We're all so happy for her. Just such an incredible result. But let's go to the men's final. It was the number one seed, Jannik Sinner, versus the number two seed, Sasha Zverev, squaring off in the final. Sinner was incredible once again, back-to-back Aussie Open champs. Zverev has fallen short in his third Grand Slam final. Let's start, I guess, with Sasha. We'll get to Sinner, of course. He's the greatest current player to haven't won a Slam. Is he maybe the greatest player ever? And maybe in the open era, we don't know what even that means. We've spoken about that, but that's never won a slam. I mean, because I think he might be right now. What do you think, Jack?
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with you. I mean, the guy, obviously he was on my team for the picks. I really thought he had a chance, a good chance of winning the tournament. We didn't know what Sinner's issues were there for a day or two, it seemed like, but he clearly is feeling fine and playing insane tennis like he usually does. But I don't know. I watched a good bit of the match. This one almost felt like the first time him not having a slam yet almost got to him a little bit. He seemed for a guy who is one of the most level guys out there, kind of even keel for the most part. Nothing phases him too much. He started complaining about his tension or something early middle of the first set, and then it just kind of spiraled. And then he gets new balls. He misses one. I feel like he missed one forehand, and it got in his head. And then the tension got in his head. Ends up losing the set, losing three games in a row. And like the second set was close. I mean, they go to a breaker, but it didn't seem like he ever settled in like he normally does. and even almost felt like he didn't have a chance there after the middle of the first to the end of the first. And center is how he always is, just completely locked in. And that dude, I don't know, that dude's movement and ball striking and sliding into these eyes, like,
yeah,
it's just really, it's really fun to watch. And I think obviously Sasha will put himself in a position again to hopefully get a slam. But this one felt like he was kind of unsettled from the beginning, which was interesting to see. I feel like,
yeah, I mean, you talked about center was, if you dig into the stats of this match, was completely dominant, did not face a break point the whole entire match. I mean, when's the last time Sasha, is it ever, in a Grand Slam match, has not created one break point?
He also served over 80% first serves in the first set and lost a set.
Yeah, he can do that. He can. We know he can serve in the 70s, even 80%, as you mentioned, Jack. That's a good stat, and he still lost a set. So that's pretty demoralizing to go down 6-3 when serving 80% at 137 miles an hour, whatever he does. Sinner, obviously one of the best returners on tour, but he was completely dominant on serve. I was shocked that Sasha was not able to get into a lot of Sinner's service game. Sam, I want to start with you. What do you think about just how purely dominant Sinner was in this final? Obviously, his all-court game we talked about, but especially on serve, he did not give Sasha one break point. That's incredible.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, and you don't think of Sinner as a guy with a massive serve. He's got a great mm-hmm. serve. He's made some improvements on it. And mm-hmm. so that it's a surprising stat when you say it out loud. Zverev is a great returner. He drifts back in when he's returning. So that usually makes it so he can put a lot of balls in play. And like mm-hmm. I said, Sinner's not he's not 6'6" hitting serves at 140, but he's got a great serve. But Sinner is separating himself on the hard courts. He won Australia, won the US Open, now won Australia yep. again. Three hard court slams in a row. It's pretty impressive from him. And he was just, I know it's some of the sets were close, but just dominant performance from him the entire tournament. Honestly, the entire men's tournament was kind of sucked this year. There really wasn't like a great match, in my opinion. Alcaraz, Djokovic was fun, but like I feel like you didn't have that. Like when we talk about this tournament in 6 months, you're like, oh, what match do you remember? You're not going to remember any of them. Sinner has just like separated himself on hard courts from the rest of the field. Like a bummer from a fan's perspective almost.
Yeah, I think the biggest piece of adversity he faced was in that Runa match somewhere yeah. in the third set. They'd split the first two. He faced some break points and he looked physically hampered out there. Maybe that was in the second set. I can't remember what it was, but he's able to, you know, play through that. And even at the end of the Shelton match, he was kind of doing something to his hip. You might have thought that he had some physical concerns, certainly did not show it in the finals. Sinner, just absolutely incredible. Jack touched on it, his movement. Stevie, like Sinner's movement on the outside of the court, how he's able to slide in, slide on the forehand side, slide on the backhand side. He's impenetrable on hard courts, especially like a, you know, like a medium to fastish hard court. I think he's much better because his counter punching just it gives more bang for his buck that way. I think a surface like Indian Wells on a hard court it definitely favors maybe someone like Alcaraz over Sinner because it's a lot grittier. But just his level of play from the back of the court, Stevie, especially if you get to see some of the final in this final, what do you think about that? And like, what's it going to take for someone to beat this guy on a hard court, providing he's healthy and fully fit?
Yeah, it's scary. His movement, it's hard to compare generations and generational talents, but I don't know. He might be the best mover and striker of the tennis ball combined that I've ever seen. Like he can go he can run side to side 20, 30 feet forward, backwards, left, right, whatever it might be, and hit the absolute crap out of the ball. And never feel like he's in a defensive position where he just has to kind of throw one up to give himself time. He always feels like he gets there with enough energy and enough force to hit the ball to get himself back into the point. It's really impressive. And his aura, his invincibility in these slams is potentially growing to the point of the Novaks, Rafas, Rogers at these slams, where it's going to take a monumental effort to beat somebody 3 out of 5. So given that fact, and then going backwards to Sasha here, for me, I think he needs to take some of Maddie's advice and let go. Like he is such a good tennis player. He is good enough to win slams. I think he is a bit burdened by the fact that he hasn't won one. And that holds a lot of stress, a lot of weight. I know that's what held me back my whole career, you know. But he's got to just let go, because he can play these tennis matches where he's just absolutely incredible. And in the final, it just felt as if watching it, that there was that little, you know, that little weight on his shoulder that was just like, hey, like, this could be another day where all people are going to talk about is how I can't win one of these, or I haven't won one of these. And only he and his team can get himself to the position to believe in himself in those moments. And I think, unfortunately, until he does it in a slam final, there's no practicing that. Like John had talked about Shelton hitting those forehands in big moments. That's a skill set that has to be, you know, has to be within, and it has to be done at the moment, at the biggest moments. And he just has to keep putting himself in those positions as many times as possible. As cliche as that sounds, just keep knocking at the door, and eventually it's going to open. But he's got to, I think he just has to let go in those big moments in slam finals. And I think he'll be back, and I do think he will get one at some point.
Yeah. Do you guys think that the French Open is his best opportunity to win a slam? Because that's what I think. I think he's best on clay.
I think as well.
Especially like fast clay, if the weather's hot. It really doesn't matter. He's good on clay just in general. But so, Stevie, you would agree. Sam, what do you think is his best chance to win a slam? I think it's the French.
I think so, too. Like you said, his ball striking's, he's a big guy. He's got long levers. He can hit the ball, like, through the clay. He's mm-hmm. been to the finals of the French Open. Like, he's – I think that's his best opportunity. You know, especially if the draw sets up right for him. If he's still going to be ranked number – I don't know if he'll be ranked 2 at the time of the French Open, but he'll most likely be a top 4 seed, kind of depending upon what section of the draw he gets in, which half, if he can avoid Sinner or Alcaraz, based on the seeding, if one of those guys gets knocked out. But yeah, I put the French Open as the one slam that he has the best shot to win.
Yeah. Jack, what do you think?
Yeah, I say they're in New York. I mean, I think just because I feel like Arthur Ashe Stadium is now a little bit slower, so it might give him a little, like, and then he can also hit through the ball.
Yeah.
And hit through the court well when it gets later into it. He's been in a final there, obviously, as well. So, one of those two.
Yeah, I think something's holding him back at Wimbledon. Splitting hairs. He's number 2 in the world. He's a freaking phenomenal player. Doesn't volley that well. I think that's held him back at Wimbledon a bit. Like, he has a lot of times opportunities to put away volleys, and he just doesn't quite do it. So I think he could improve at the net. There's no reason he couldn't do extremely well at Wimbledon. He can play well on all surfaces. But anyway, Sasha, he's now the 7th man in the Open era to lose his first 3 Grand Slam finals. He joined Agassi, Murray, Casper Ruud, Dominic Thiem, Ivan Isevic, Ivan Lendl, and Tony Roach.
Well, that's at least a cool list to be a part of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would like to be a part of that list.
I would love to be a part of that list.
That's a good crew.
I would love to be a part of that list. So, obviously, Agassi broke through, Murray broke through, Thiem broke through, Ivan Isevic broke through, Lendl broke through, Casper is yet to break through.
You have no clue if Roach broke through.
I don't know if Roach broke through. I'm going to say he did.
He probably did.
I mean, I think he did because
he did. Ruud was the only one that hasn't won a slam. Yeah. So he has
right there.
Yeah, he did. Roachy won a slam.
Roachy. Okay.
The French. Sorry, Roachy. Did y'all see the embrace after the match? I'm sure you did. Everyone's seen it. It's been played a million times. Of Sasha sort of weeping a little bit into Sinner's arms. That was tough to see. And Sasha's quote after the match, this is a hard one to really read out, is, "I'm just not good enough. I don't know if I'll ever be able to lift the trophy, but I will keep trying." I like the end of that quote. Didn't love the beginning. Obviously, it was still fresh in his memory, but that embrace that they had, obviously Sinner was consoling him. This has got to be really, really tough for Sasha. What do you guys think about that embrace? Stevie, I think you brought up a good point. I mean, Sasha is – he's not getting any younger. He's 27 or 28, and these guys are really just getting going with Sinner and Alcaraz. You could argue they haven't hit the primes of their career yet. And the window for someone like Sasha is probably in the next 3 years, you would imagine, before he hits 30 or, 28, 32, 3-4 years. So – man, Sasha, he's going to have to – I think Jack brought up a good point. I think in the previous Slam finals. It didn't seem like the pressure of the moment got to him. This one, it maybe did. And I thought after he lost these other finals, especially that French Open, as heartbreaking as that was, he recovered very, very well from it and played well the rest of the year. It'll be interesting to see how Sasha recovers from this, because in the past, he's done just fine after these really disappointing Slam finals. So I guess Sasha's prospects going forward, Stevie, for the rest of the year, what do you think he's going to have to do mentally to get over this loss and, you know, continue to have a good year?
I think there's going to be nothing that needs to be done until May, and then there's going to be nothing that needs to be done until July, until the next Slams. So he's going to be fine at Indian Wells, Miami, Monte Carlo, Madrid, Rome. Like, he's going to be fine. He's probably going to win one or two of those tournaments like he usually does. And then he's going to find himself in the second week of the French, you know, on a nice, beautiful spring day in May in Paris. And he's going to have to find himself and kick himself in the butt to get him over the finish line. That's the only thing that he can keep doing. You know, he does just have to keep trying. And that quote is tricky because the lights aren't the brightest at that moment for him just because there, but I would assume maybe he will take a step back and, I don't know, a couple of days, a week, whatever it might be, and be like, okay, I've now figured out how to get through the first four matches of a slam kind of unscathed. You know, that's a huge piece to being, you know, emotionally, mentally, physically fresh. And he's going to be just fine. I think he's going to be great. He's going to win some master series, and then he's going to find himself at the back end of the French, and he's going to have another opportunity to kind of kick that door open or let it slam shut again. And that's completely 100% up to him.
Yeah. I mean, you got to think like the complete inverse of Sasha's loss his first three slam finals. Sinner is 3-for-3 in slam finals. So you got to think if Sasha finds himself in another final, there's a very high likelihood he could be playing against Sinner or someone like Alcaraz. So it's going to be a massive mental hurdle that he's going to have to get over. We'll see if he's going to be able to do that going forward. Dude, I cried when I lost the Belgrade final to you. I cried in your arms.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that.
In 2010? Yeah. 2010 Belgrade final?
Then Mount Vesuvius exploded.
Yeah, exactly.
Tears were on my shirt.
Then I got stuck. And I had to spend a night with CB in a tiny Barcelona hotel. All right, snake draft update. There's three winners. There's one loser, but we haven't decided who that loser is yet because Sam and Stevie tied DFL with 6 points. This is exactly what we wanted. We needed Novak to beat Carlos in the quarterfinals for you guys to each have 6 points, and we needed Sasha to beat Novak for y'all to stay tied at 6 points. That's exactly what happened, and we have determined, as everyone knows, that the tiebreaker for the loser here is a pickleball singles match between Sam Querrey, recovering from his Achilles tear, and Stevie Johnson, who doesn't have much pickleball experience, but Stevie thinks he's going to win. Sam is convinced Stevie has no shot to win. So when is this match going down, guys? Have y'all decided when it's... And Stevie, you said you wanted to add a wrinkle to this something?
There's a couple things I'd like to add. We are playing the match tomorrow, barring weather. That is Monday
tomorrow.
Here.
Yeah.
And we
Sam?
Will probably keep the results until we can get the YouTube video or all the lowlights, as John likes to call them, kind of... So we're going to try and keep it a secret, not for very long, but, you know, hopefully it's just like a week or 10 days. Who knows? But Sam
can Jack
stated,
and I know the result? Yeah,
well, surely we can like live stream it to us or something.
We could tell you guys, but.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe though. Maybe we won't. Maybe we'll make them watch it too.
Maybe we won't.
No, I want to watch it while figuring out the result.
We're not very
like
technologically savvy,
then.
Jack.
Okay.
So we're going to have to figure out some things. We got some things cooking here. But Sam had stated he wants to play one game to 15. That's not happening. We're going to play 2 out of 3 to 7. Because this is his only strategy is to – because I have no idea what I'm doing
out there.
2 out of 3 to 7?
You don't even know how the scoring works.
Well, yeah, because what are we going to do? Play 2 out of 3 to 15? That's ridiculous. Or to 11? Like, it doesn't
matter. Do you know how normal scoring you even play to?
You play singles to 11. And then the back draw, which you know very well, you play to 15.
There's no more
I have
back
some
draw.
Scores if you'd like
no
to see.
More back draw.
But yeah, because I can't let you play one game because you're going to get out to a lead for sure because I don't know what I'm doing. I got to like figure out how to play singles. Like there's going to be some strategy involved. I know it and I'm going to be poor. So we're going to play 2 out of 3 sets. We can play them short.
2 out of 3 to 7. So basically that's better for me. I only need to get 14 points instead of 15.
Yeah, that's fine. But you got to restart every set, buddy.
It doesn't matter. All right, fine.
Yeah, it does matter.
All right, this is what we're doing. It's right. 2 out of 3 to 7.
Yes.
And pickleball scoring, not that any of our listeners even know how to score in pickleball. But that's what we're doing. 2 out of 3 to 7. It's going down tomorrow. This is awesome.
Yep. I have some keys to victory.
Get like Doug out there with his tripod and phone or Wes or something.
We got multiple cameras, extra hands. We're going to have a lot of footage.
Okay, want great. To see it tomorrow. All looking forward to this. Personally, Stevie, I just only because you have not played like any pickleball. I know Sam is probably not 100%. Like he's not as mobile, as agile as he was 10 years ago. I'm going with Sam. I think Sam's a pretty, you know, he's a big favorite in this one. Jack, what do you think? I'm going with Sam.
This is all dependent on Sam's wheel down there. I don't know how you're moving.
That's pretty much all. It's dependent on my success as well, quite frankly.
I'm doing some light suicides on the basketball court. I'm jumping around.
I know you're going to be like hesitant though, like that little push off from the baseline to get up to the kitchen.
Stevie's not talented enough to like move me around on the pickleball court. Like that's what you guys don't realize. Like he's so bad.
Stevie lacks the ability to just redirect the ball one way or the other. He doesn't know how to do that. I find that hard to believe. Like, I mean, maybe Stevie's got a nasty one-hander in pickleball. Maybe he's totally sandbagging you.
He's got no game plan. He has no clue what to do.
Well, we're going to find out, aren't we?
I'm leaning a little towards Sam, but I have no idea on the movement, and I don't know if Stevie's sandbagging us.
All right, so Stevie, hold on. You just typed in that you have some keys to victory. Can you reveal those, or are you going to keep those secret?
I am going to reveal those, and we'll send them out on the socials later, but I'm going to ask Charlie if he can share his screen. I don't know if he can do that. If not, I'll just read them off.
Reveal the keys to beating me in front of me?
It's not strategy, really. It's just kind of common sense.
Okay, here we go. Can I read this out, Stevie?
Yeah, you can read this out. I have four huge keys to victory.
SJ's keys to victory over Sam in pickleball singles that he typed out on his phone. Okay, there's four of them. Key number one, he is terrible at singles. Take a look at his most recent scores pre-injury. Okay? Key number two, refuse to lose. This is the most important singles match in my career.
Probably my only singles match, so it's going to be the most important.
All right, key number three. The PPA signed him as an influencer, not as a professional.
That's false.
Not as a professional player. And four, if all else fails, watch this video and get inspired that he can't move anymore.
But it's going to come up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's coming.
You did an entire PowerPoint for us. This is incredible.
Yeah, technology's tough here, boys.
Yeah.
But we're going to see some scores that Sam probably would like to forget. And then we're going to see a video.
This is the injury.
No.
This is the actual injury?
Yep.
Oh, man, that's low.
If you got kids at home, cover their eyes.
This is bulletin board material.
This is it right here. This is how I'm going to win. Watch this right here.
There you go. Look at the movement. Boom.
Great first step. Oh, there it goes. Oh. Bye-bye. Oh, he's down.
Oh.
Oh, down.
Yeah, that.
That's the only key to victory I have, really. That's it. He can't move.
By the way, Sam was going to win that match, by the way.
Yeah, I was up like 11-5, 9-5 or something.
And you likely would have won the tournament, I think.
The great athlete that I am, I tore it. I almost regained my balance.
You really did.
Shout out to myself. Yeah, I'm like a wounded animal in the African wilderness.
The stage is set, and this is going down tomorrow. We can't wait. Jack and I, we want to get some like insider infos, like a live stream for this. Okay.
Yeah.
We won't reveal who wins, but.
You guys just start thinking about the five people we want SJ to cold DM.
Oh, right, because that is the ultimate punishment here.
And fans, too. We can have the fans. Like, who do you guys want?
Yep.
Stevie, because he's going to lose, to message or try to get on the pod.
That's fair. Let's do it.
All right. We're going to end this Something Major with a few fan questions that were submitted. But before we do that, I was thinking about this last night. I'm going to need help, someone. After every slam, I mentioned this a long time ago. I like to go back in the draw and see who the ultimate loser was.
Ooh.
Okay. So let's do this. I just need help from you guys because I got it all the way down. Okay. So Sasha beat Novak. Novak beat Carlos. Carlos beat Jack Draper. Jack Draper beat Vukic. Vukic beat Sebi Korda. Who did Sebi Korda beat in the first round? I cannot remember. So Lucas Klein of Slovakia.
Yeah, he's the worst player in Australia this year.
Well, if you keep going backwards, he was a qualifier. So there's going to be...
Oh.
Yeah. So
that's a good point.
You really got to go backwards here.
It's Alexei Gallarneau. Gallarnarv.
Canadian.
The Canadian.
Yeah, Canadian. And he... I play fantasy hockey with him. He played at NC State.
Wait, he's in our league?
No. He's not in our league. I'm in another league. Yeah, he's super nice guy. That is the real ultimate loser.
Yeah, if he's watching, you are the worst worst player at the Australian Open 2025.
He lost the guy, 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 lost the guy. So I guess we're giving it to Alexi. All right, let's move on to some fan questions. We had a handful submitted. We're going to go through two or three. Sam liked this one in particular. Snooker stones. Were you ever scared of spiders or snakes going to Australia? Sam, you liked this question, so let's start with you. Were you ever scared of spiders or snakes in Australia?
No. But I'm scared of spiders and snakes. Well, let me guess. But I'm scared of spiders and snakes everywhere.
Yeah, we've established that here.
Around my own house, America, Europe, Australia. I've had snakes in my backyard. I had spiders. Like, I'm scared of them all the time. I assume they're all poisonous. I assume every snake and spider I see is very poisonous.
Jack, ever scared of these in Australia?
Spiders do nothing for me. So snakes are my biggest fear in life. No prank ideas for you guys. Thank you. Please don't. Now if a snake got into our hotel rooms while we were down there or something, that's just too good. It's not like we were out, you know, going on hikes and in the wilderness of Australia. And so no, but I hate snakes.
Yeah. I'm out on snakes. I don't do the outdoors. I'm good. Spiders don't bother me. I feel like I can kind of outmaneuver them, but, snakes, yeah, I'm good. I'm out. Don't need to be near them ever. I give Sam a hard time. But he's right.
Yeah, I was never scared in Australia. I mean, like, I guess they're known for their poisonous snakes.
We're always in the city, though. You got to go out to, like, the outback.
Yeah.
Exactly. We're always in the city. I prefer snakes over spiders. I'm really, truthfully, not that scared of snakes. I'm not like I'm going to, like, go handle one. But if I know one's not poisonous, I'll pick it up or try to pick it up. I don't care how big it is. Or maybe not, like, one of these, you know, pythons.
Like Crocodile Dundee over there.
What?
I'm totally fine. If I know it's not poisonous, I'll try to pick it up for sure.
It can still bite you.
That's fine. It won't kill me. But there's a way to do it. There's a way to do it, dude. You step.
You don't know how to do it.
I absolutely do. I absolutely do. You step. You approach from behind. If you have an instrument or something, it's a good. No, I'm serious.
And you think I was crazy talking about the bobcat? You sound like a lunatic.
No, this is.
You guys are both lunatics.
No, dude. You step on the back of the snakes, like on the back of his. You're not to kill him, just to pick him up. You step on the back of his the back of his neck that paralyzes him. And then you move your hand down and then you take it with your thumb and you pick. You hold his head like that. They can't move. And then you hold
it's wiggling. Like you can't step on it when it's trying to get you.
Okay, yeah, I understand. Like, you have to try to sneak up on it, though. There's ways to do it.
You're like 6'9". What do you mean sneak up on it?
I'm taller than that, but I can sneak up on a snake. Anyway, whatever.
Whoa.
The answer is no. We're not scared of snakes.
I can see Izzy like army crawling through the grass to sneak up on a little gopher snake to try to.
If you can guarantee me a snake's not poisonous, I'll try to pick it up. No problem.
Get one sent to your house.
That's fine. Okay.
The next something major, if you lose, we got to get you live video of you picking up a snake.
That's fine. Like, give it like make it like a black rat snake. Not poisonous, I'll pick it up. No problem. I'll try to pick it up. I won't be scared to. He might wiggle away from me.
Why don't you go get Hobbs a snake right now and bring it back to the house?
I had a snake growing up. That's why. We had a ball python.
That checks out.
Growing up.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, so one more fan question from at Scott Farmer 2864. Love the pod, he starts with. Well, thank you, Scott. In light of the double bounce controversy this year with Swiatek and last year with Draper, what obligation, if any, is a player under to call the double bounce on him or herself? Stevie, let's start with you. What is that on the player to call the double bounce, you think?
100%. It's on the player. Okay. We all know you get to it or you don't. Like, we all know that. Tennis is a game of integrity. You should be able to have enough, you know, kind of gumption to call things on yourself when you are in the wrong in those moments. And now, especially in today's world, there's cameras. Every court has Hawkeye Live. There's cameras everywhere. So even in these situations, like we talked about, play the point out, whatever it may be, unless the umpire is like 100% certain to make a call, just go back and check. Be like, look, this was a mistake. Like Swiatek, Draper last year in Cincinnati. And then we can go back and get the call right. We're too far into this age of technology to getting some of these calls incorrect. So that's the frustrating part.
But sometimes I don't think as a player you know if you actually got it or not. Sometimes it is so close.
Come on. You do know.
I've had it before. Like, you honestly don't know. It's so close. It's up to the umpire to just, like you said, play the point out and then have the video replay be able to look at it every single time.
Which is fine. Like, I'm with you on that. Like, if you are not sure in the moment.
But the player shouldn't call it.
Sure. If you're not sure in the moment, great. But play the point out then and be like, hey, I don't know if I got that. I don't know if that ball touched me, like, on the way out or something. Like, have enough, like, you got to have the character be like, look, I think I messed up there. And it's only going to happen maybe once a match.
Are you okay with the player saying, like, look, I honestly don't know if I got there or not?
Yeah, but go to the ref and be like, I think I might have missed this, or I might have double bounced this. Like, it should be on the player to be like, hey, like, hand up, I don't think I got this, or whatever it might be. I think there's some issues there. Can we take 5 seconds to go back and look? It shouldn't be that hard.
I don't think it's on the player. I think it's on the referee and video replay. I don't want the player getting involved in the rules.
Yeah, I'm kind of with Sam there. But that's saying, I don't know that I ever have, like, got to a drop shot with some acrobatic move, like sliding into it. Now Jack, being probably, I think Sam and Stevie, you guys are incredibly athletic. I think Jack, probably the stuff that Jack could do on the court movement wise is the best of certainly myself, us four. Jack, you've had a lot of situations where you're going for ball and do you know for sure if you get it on a double bouncer before it bounces twice?
I say a very high percentage you have the feeling of whether you got to the ball or not. I think I would prefer a player calling it, just because I think more times than not, a referee trying to see, like, he's already watching lines. Now he's having to watch if you're getting to the ball. I think there's going to be more error when a ref is calling it over a player calling it, just because they don't have the feeling. They're not the ones running to the ball. They don't know, like, whether the tip of the racket got under the ball at the very last second, or if it does that one weird where it bounces into the ground, but it kind of still is, like, on the same trajectory of, yeah. So I think there's less room for error if players are calling it on themselves over referees, would be my two cents.
We get the replay as fans. Like, when you're watching it on ESPN, they show the replay. So, like, why every major should have the...
I completely agree. The video replay should be part of it for sure.
I think we agree that the rule as it is now, that the other player has to stop the point to challenge, whether, like, right away, that's the stupidest rule ever.
That's crazy.
That's crazy.
Completely crazy. That needs to change. Wow. I think we can all agree on that.
Correct.
So.
Yeah.
Anyways. I really can't remember ever an instance where I was going for a ball and it was iffy, and, like, not one time my whole career. So anyways, I don't have much to add there. Guys, one last trivia. Aussie Open trivia. Here's a question. Yannick Sinner is only the eighth player to win his first three slam finals. Who were the other seven in the Open era?
All right. Alcaraz.
Yeah. Okay. Alcaraz.
I don't know. Federer.
Rafa. Novak.
Nadal and Novak. No.
Hey, is our guest Stan Wawrinka 3-0?
Wow.
Wawrinka. Yes, I got it.
Nice.
Let's go.
So Alcaraz, Fed, Wawrinka.
Borg, maybe, back in the day. I feel like he won a lot.
Good one. Borgie.
Oh.
Nice.
I feel like, honestly, we're just naming out great players and just hoping for the best here.
We got four. Who are the other three?
Yeah. Let's just give us the others.
We got, like, five of them, no?
Yeah. We would have eventually got them all, because we would have just kept just random
listing names.
Okay. Guga. That's really good.
Oh, Connors.
I was about to say Connors, actually. Just guessing.
Connors and Edberg. We probably would have gotten.
We eventually would have.
Eventually. By process elimination.
Just start naming Hall of Famers. We would have gotten there. All right. We did pretty good there. I didn't help out at all. I think we got four of the seven. The remaining three were Guga, Connors, and Stefan Edberg. That's it, guys. That was something major. I really enjoyed it. I think the people, our listeners, enjoyed it as well. The plan is to keep doing this as slams come around. So next up is May for the French Open. So thank you to everyone for tuning in. We had a lot of fun going through the Aussie Open with you guys throughout these 2 weeks. Really, really appreciate it.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.